Hello and welcome to Food Stuff. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about the popsicle ice pop and other quiescently frozen ice pop desserts.
Yes, because we were not sued yet by the Derby Pie people. But the popsicle people, I don't know. It's another risk that we're taking.
It is. We take a lot of deep risks on this show. It's all for you.
It really is. So, I mean, we're just putting our necks on the line to tell you about these frozen treats of the summer, one might call them, if one wanted to.
If one so dared.
If one dared.
Popsicles. I pluralized it. I know.
The popsicle police
the
are going to knock
coming.
On our studio door.
Okay. All of this begs the question, why are we going through this verbal acrobatics, these verbal acrobatics? What is a popsicle? Or a popsicle, what is it?
This is a legal quandary.
A legal quandary?
And Lauren, since I'm already in trouble with the law... Perhaps you should take this one.
All right. Well, legally, a popsicle is a brand of quiescently frozen confections, a.k.a. flavored ice pops.
Quiescently frozen.
I'm coming back to it.
Okay.
In the parlance of our times, popsicles are usually fruit juice or fruit-flavored water, with or without added sweeteners, flavorings, colorings, and or texturizers, that's been frozen in place into an oblong shape with a sturdy, flat stick stuck partway through the center to act like a handle.
And the sticks, popsicles, and yes, this is on the Popsicle official Popsicle website, the sticks that they use are traditionally birchwood.
And yes, popsicle is what you would call a proprietary eponym. That's a word that's a legally registered trademark as a company name. It's the name of a company, but that word has come to be used generically by, you know, the people at large to mean any form of whatever thing that company is famous for. You know, like saying Google when you mean internet search, or Band-Aid when you mean adhesive bandage, or Kleenex when you mean tissue, Coke when you mean soda, or, I mean, any soda.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Oh, yeah. Styrofoam when you mean extruded polystyrene foam.
Well, that's just difficult to say.
Frisbee when you mean throwing disc.
Get me my throwing disc now.
I'd like to have fun. Quickly, my throwing disc, sir.
That sounds like a weapon.
Throwing. Ooh, it does.
It really does.
I mean, frisbees are sort of weapons anyway.
That's true.
It depends on how good you are at catching them.
You're totally correct.
But okay, so if you're being legally, technically correct, you never use the word popsicle as a noun. You never have a popsicle. You have a popsicle ice pop.
Oh, I can't wait to annoy someone about this later.
Similarly, you cannot pluralize the word popsicle. If you're being real on the up and ups about it, you're not going to the store to buy popsicles. You're going to buy popsicle pops.
Of course.
Clearly. And if you said that you love popsicles' great taste, Annie, you're talking about the flavor of a company, and I think you should look at your life and your choices.
What a fool I am.
You'd be correct to say the great taste of popsicle ice pops.
Now I'm just like a walking commercial.
This is language that I took pretty directly from their website about how to navigate these complex problems.
Because they are complex problems that we all face, especially in the summer.
Yes. Oh, man, I've faced a number of ice pop devices during summer months.
Ice pop devices should be the legal name. Let's just be honest.
Okay, so popsicle, yes, popsicle is a brand, but also you. I mean, you know, you're probably not going to get sued if you talk about popsicles like within your own home.
I think every place should have a jar, like a swear jar, but it's a popsicle jar, and the company comes around and collects it. Like every time you say popsicle, you put a nickel in there. At the end of the year, popsicle, the company collects all the nickels.
Oh, or maybe they could have a big one for like Google and Kleenex and all that stuff and come around. I'm not sure how they would divvy it up. You'd need to have different compartments.
You're right. But I don't know. We'll have to look into separately outside of the podcast if Google has a whole page about how to navigate talking about their product.
I think it's just for employees.
Okay. Yeah, see? Then we're fine. The nickel system is only for popsicle.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Although they probably don't need any nickels because each year popsicle products top 2 billion in sales.
2 billion units, yeah.
And the most popular popsicle brand flavor is cherry. I found that surprising.
Oh.
I don't know what I would imagine strawberry, I guess.
I guess me too, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Tracking down non-branded ice pop sales, or non-popsicle branded ice pop sales, rather, is a little squidgy because, you know, legally, the term is quiescently frozen confections, and in terms of market sales, they're in the general category of frozen novelties, which can encompass things that are clearly not popsicles, one way or another, like, you know, wrapped ice cream cones, ice cream sandwiches, stuff like that. But in the United States, as of 2016, the frozen novelties category saw $1.2 billion in sales.
Ooh. If you don't want to contribute to that $1.2 billion, you can make them at home.
Yeah, yeah. They're pretty easy to make.
Yeah.
Because, okay, the term quiescently means in a state of inactivity or dormancy.
Ooh.
Which here means you don't have to mess with popsicles as you're freezing them because they will shape up all on their own. Unlike ice cream, which you have to churn while you're freezing it to whip wee bits of air into, like, the physical structure to create the right type of crystallization that gives the finished ice cream that dreamy, smooth texture. Mm-hmm. But not so with popsicles. If you buy a popsicle mold, which are pretty cheap at larger groceries, like big box stores, you know, on the internets, you can pour pretty much any juice or soda or booze into the mold. Just leave it in the freezer for a few hours and have pretty excellent popsicles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, straight liquors wouldn't work because the freezing point of alcohol is way below the freezing point of water. But you could water them down to make like a cocktail pop.
Yeah, totally.
And not to go on too much of a booze tangent here.
No, never.
But certainly in my research, I went on a really huge booze tangent. Mm-hmm. So like for the record, you need less than about 10% total alcohol by volume in your mixture in order to freeze something solid in your, you know, home freezer.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that for every, like, cup of non-booze liquid, you can add about 3 ounces. That's about 2 standard shots of standard 40-ish proof alcohol.
Ah.
Just FYI.
Just FYI.
I'm not saying that I have enormous plans for experimenting with such recipes over the summer.
All.
Or at our next D&D game.
Hypothetical plans, perhaps. I would like to partake. Hypothetically, in these imagined popsicles.
Understood. Hypothetically.
Hypothetically. Awesome. We do have a local popsicle vendor, King of Pops, and they make poptails.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which are cocktails with popsicles, well, pops. Oh, excuse me.
Ice pops.
Ice pops inserted in them that sort of like
it
melts.
It melts down into the cocktail. It makes it look and taste quite lovely.
It is very nice. One of my favorite things that we had at Atlanta Food and Wine was the poptail from Old Fourth, our old pals at Old Fourth Distillery. It was lovely.
It was. Oh, while we're shouting things out,
yes.
We should also shout out there's both a Brain Stuff video episode about quiescently frozen confections.
Yes.
That Josh Clark did, and he's some kind of mad genius. I think it's actually my very favorite video episode of Brain Stuff ever.
It's pretty excellent.
Yeah. Also mad props to Paul Deccant, who is, I'm not going to say a mad genius, just regular, like, even-keeled genius.
A very even-keeled genius.
Yeah.
He drinks a lot of tea.
He does. Oh, man. I respect his hydration.
I do as well.
Oh, and another show that we work in conjunction with here at How Stuff Works, How Stuff You Missed in History Class, did a whole episode about good humor versus popsicle.
Ooh.
Yeah. Intrigue.
Very much intrigue.
We're
not
going
humorous at all.
Oh, I would say not. We're going to get a little bit into that intrigue, plus the rest of the history of the popsicle brand and its ice pops. Ice pops in general.
Mm-hmm.
Right after a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
I was going to say our sanity, but for my sanity, I'm probably just going to use popsicles.
Okay.
Please don't sue me, popsicle company. But you can send free product. That's cool. Popsicles are pretty new in the scheme of things. It's true that in ancient Rome, slaves were tasked with retrieving ice from way up in the cold mountains and bringing back blocks of it that was then crushed up with fruits and spices for their masters. Sorbets and freezes were observed by Marco Polo, and Thomas Jefferson probably made the same things when showing off at Monticello because of course he did.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as popsicles, we're talking 1905.
Oh, wow.
As in CE, not BCE.
Yeah.
CE. The story goes that an 11-year-old boy in San Francisco, or maybe Oakland, where it was colder, because people have looked at the temperatures, Frank Epperson, forgot his glass of powdered drink mix and water. He was trying to make his own soft drink, good for him, complete with straw outside overnight. When the sun rose, the kid discovered that the whole thing had frozen. And upon licking it, because of course you're going to lick it, he discovered it was delicious. Young entrepreneur that he was, he started selling them around his neighborhood. In 1923, now an adult, Frank started selling them around a nearby amusement park called Neptune Beach, a.k.a. the West Coast Coney Island. Hmm. Also the same venue that Snow Cones debuted, by the way.
Oh, wow. Huh.
Armed with proof that his product was successful, in 1925 he patented frozen confection of attractive appearance, which can be conveniently consumed without contamination by contact with a hand, without the need for a plate, spoon, fork, or other implement, and began marketing them. He didn't call them popsicles, though. He called them Epsicles.
Epsicles.
You know, his name plus icicle. It was Frank's kids who started referring to them as popsicles because he was their pop. See?
I read a bunch of different origin stories about the name. I also read that it was because of lollipops.
That makes sense.
Sickles, or maybe because he wanted to advertise that they were made with soda pop.
Oh.
So they're popsicles. Probably all three simultaneously.
Yeah.
Maybe in branching dimensions.
We love our branching dimensions at Foodstuff.
We do.
Unfortunately, Frank had to sell the patent shortly after to Joe Loco because he was broke. When asked about this later, Frank responded, "I was flat and had to liquidate all my assets. I haven't been the same since."
Oh, wow.
The Loco brought the frozen confection into the national spotlight, though. At the low, low price of a nickel, these babies were a hit. It was marketed as a frozen lollipop. It even withstood the Great Depression, in part due to the introduction of the two-stick popsicle, while maintaining that 5 cents price point.
Oh, yeah. Share one with your friends. 2 for the price of 1.
I can't imagine sharing a popsicle like that. I mean, logistically.
Well, I mean, you break them apart.
Oh!
Yeah. That's why.
My life, I don't have much experience with popsicles, I've got to say. I had a lot of those freezy pops. But,
Yeah.
Not straight up popsicles. Those were not a big thing in my house. Clearly. Popsicle Pete, Popsicle's mascot, as in the company Popsicle, comes onto the scene in 1939. But confection drama abounds.
Confection drama?
And this brings us to good humor. Who did not have a good humor at all. Or maybe they did, I don't know. But they came out with their own product on a stick, chocolate-covered ice cream, and Lowe sued their ass for infringing on their copyright. The court got them to meet in the middle, awarding Lowe the domain of water-based pops and Good Humor the domain of milk-based pops.
Huh.
This, of course, was not the end of it. It involved a lot of arguments and big questions like, what is ice cream, Lauren? And how does one define sherbet anyway? Keeps us up at night, I know. By World War II, the popsicle had become so popular that the 8th Air Force unit picked them as a symbol for American life. Popsicle's Fudgesicle debuted in 1946. The double stick popsicle went away in 1986, so maybe that explains why I don't know what to do with it. Flavor Ice was introduced in 1969 by Gelcert. You know, those are the things, the popsicles and the plastic tubes, sometimes called freezies.
Yeah. It doesn't have a stick. You just kind of cut off the end of the surprisingly sharp plastic tube,
yeah,
and you stick it in your face.
Yeah. They come usually in liquid form and then you freeze them.
Right.
And I have a conspiracy theory that no matter where you are, you have one of these in your freezer somewhere.
We have a lot of them in my freezer, actually.
Do you?
I'm very confused about why.
Yes, exactly. Who bought these? When? Why? How? Who knows?
How long have they been there? Have they always been there?
I don't know. You can get them in electrolyte sports flavor now. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and I love this quote I found about them. The cool down choice for cheapskates everywhere. Woo.
Dang. Okay.
Yeah. Their competitor, Otter Pops, which is sort of a push-up pop situation, came onto the market in 1970. Gelcert eventually got the rights to them as well. And we mentioned them as sort of the impetus for the blue raspberry flavor in our artificial flavoring episode. If you haven't heard that one, want to check it out. In 1989, Unilever acquired Popsicle, the brand, and also Good Humor. So that put an end to their legal battle that they had going on. Hmm. But it opened the door for another very Derby Pie-esque legal battle to protect the copyright of Popsicle, capital P, the brand. It doesn't want to be Kleenex or Xerox, like we mentioned at the top. In 2010, they sued a Brooklyn pop maker, People's Pops, for a blog post that included Popsicle. A blog post, Lauren.
Don't take their name. That's their valuable property.
You know, if I had a name, maybe I'd feel the same way.
Annie, you have a name. Your name is Annie Reese.
And I'm still waiting for the Reese's Company. I'm here.
Oh, not yet?
Not yet.
Oh, man.
But soon.
Foodstuff at HowStuffWorks.com, you guys. Get in touch.
I can feel it in my bones.
It's on the way.
Frank Everson died in 1983. And is now a part of a food tour in California that also includes Domingo Ghirardelli? Yes?
Yeah.
Yes. Of the chocolate world and our old pal, Trader Vic.
Oh, Trader Vic.
Epperson is also featured in a Christian self-help book about trusting God to help you discover your purpose in life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Heck yeah, dude.
Popsicles and crime aside. Because this is a whole article I found.
Okay, so this is not aside from popsicles and crime. This is an aside on.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not like
popsicle
a popsicle.
Crime?
Yeah. It should be a character in a comic book. But no, we're talking about popsicles randomly coming up in crime. They've been involved in a surprising amount of crime stories. And I wasn't necessarily surprised thanks to all the mind trap I used to play at the beach. But still. Okay. One such case stems from the summer of 1935 when Philadelphians woke up to this headline, "Argues over popsicle. Vendor is shot."
Oh, no.
This resulted from a debt the vendor had accrued of 10 cents. When the popsicle vendor couldn't pay up, the loaner demanded two popsicles as payment. The vendor disagreed to the terms and got a bullet for his trouble.
Oh.
It was during the Great Depression, so 10 cents was a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, don't shoot anybody, but
saying. It's a bigger deal than it is now, yes.
Yes. A 13-year-old boy who ran a Birmingham, Alabama ice cream truck got robbed in 1952, and the culprit sold 6 dozen ice cream sandwiches and popsicles and $4.
They were hungry.
I mean, my thing is, how did they not melt 6 dozen ice cream sandwiches? Anyway, take this headline from Los Angeles in 1952. Parents lose suit over boys' popsicle pool row. Yes, there was a lawsuit that took 8 hours of deliberation from the jury. And it all started when a young boy showed up at the Seminole Hot Springs resort pool with not one but two popsicles. And the 11-year-old boy on duty and the son of the resort's owner would not stand for it. Nay, he wouldn't allow it. The moms of the boys got involved and allegedly threw popsicles at each other.
The mothers?
Yes, as mature adults do when they have disagreements. The classic popsicle defense. The parents of the popsicle boys sued the resort for $40,500, but yeah, no dice. And after chasing a teenage bicycling popsicle thief and calling the police, a pursuer ended up in trouble with the cops because he had no license. The 1955 Washington, D.C. headline was, "Popsicle Theft and Chase. Get Victim in Police Jam."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. After a dozen popsicles were stolen in 1975, the Hartford Courant ran with this headline, "Police Hope to Lick Popsicle Mystery."
Oh.
Yeah. Had to include it.
Well, good job, Hartford.
Yeah. It's a pun worthy of food stuff.
Mm-hmm. I don't have anything about popsicle crime, but I will say that that modernly the popsicle brand does tie-ins with all sorts of other brands. There's a Jawbreaker flavored ice pops, all kinds of Frozen, Disney Frozen related ice pops.
Yeah,
it's like the whole thing. I just realized how
it's just obvious
finger gunny that is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's
totally clear. You know. Despicable Me, stuff like that. The Minions, yeah. Mm-hmm. Bright yellow. I don't know what flavor they are. Minion flavored? That doesn't sound
tasty.
They're
banana because they love bananas.
Oh, okay. There you go.
I've seen many a animated film.
Perfect. And this brings us to the science of creating at a large scale popsicles. Or, oh, popsicle ice pops.
The fear in her eyes. Good and job, Popsicle Company.
We're going to get to that if we're still here, right after one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So let's say that you're a big company who wants to make a new flavor of ice pop.
Okay.
It's a big commitment, even for a large company like yourself, Annie.
I am a large company, yes.
You've got to create a new mold for it and place a bulk order, like huge bulk order of wrappers and sticks that you want to probably specially design for the case. The mold alone is going to run you around $60,000.
Ooh.
And the design and marketing might be another $40,000. So it's expensive, but once you've got those things, the manufacturing process goes like this. You're going to mix up a base of sugars, stabilizers, texturizers, and water, which can be sent out to different vats to have different flavors and colors added. The mixtures are cooled to just above freezing so that they can still be pumped and poured easily, because you're going to pump them across your factory and send the mixture straight to the molds. The mold machines can carry like 200 to 300 strips of stainless steel molds. And the whole thing is capable of producing about 4,320 ice pops per hour.
Ooh.
Or up to twice that many, depending on the speed and efficiency of your machine, because there has to be a rinse and sanitize cycle in between each batch. And you might have multiple machines, like five machines on your line. These filled molds, once you pump your mix into them, they're going to pass through a long tank filled with a salt brine that's cooled to like negative 25 to 30 degrees Fahrenheit. That's about negative 32 degrees Celsius. And the tank is maybe about 20 feet long. And over the course of this journey through the tank, the pops will freeze up, with the center solidifying during that last 3 to 4 feet. Right before that point, therefore, when the pop liquid is just frozen enough to support a stick, an injector pushes in the stick. Once totally frozen, a warming tank will heat the outside of the molds just enough to let the pops release, and then they are dropped into their individual baggies, held open by gusts of air.
Wow. It's a beautiful popsicle symphony.
It's a beautiful ice pop symphony, sometimes conducted by the brand Popsicle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There you go. That's clear as day.
It is.
It's a much better way to say it out loud.
I'll try to keep that in mind. I have a history. There's a long-lost promo video, a foodstuff promo video.
We'll still post it someday.
We should. It was fun. We got to have a food fight. It was great. But I could not pronounce quiescently. And Lauren's juggling, and I keep ruining. And I have a popsicle in my hand.
It's melting.
And
don't have a backup popsicle.
No, because we're fools and thought I'd be able to pronounce quiescently, which now I can do. But at the time.
In the moment, it was stressful.
It was very stressful.
I think I only ruined shots by missing a juggle, like maybe only four times.
Yeah. We had such big plans for that video. And we were the ones that were like, we got to have juggling and a popsicle in the same scene, and we're going to be walking and the whole thing.
Yeah. At least you weren't on rollerblades. In the initial version of the script, you were like, I have to be on rollerblades and I have to be eating this popsicle and you have to be juggling, and that's what it's going to be.
And then there was going to be a confetti canyon at the end. cannon, a confetti cannon.
Yeah, not canyon. Although yeah, a canyon of...
That sounds fun.
Yeah, I'd do that too. Anyway, yeah. We'll get that up online somewhere. But in the meanwhile, this brings us to the end of our popsicle episode. And yes. Two.
Listener mail. Okay.
Okay.
I want to start out by saying that we have been delighted by the just pouring in of emails describing your favorite peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or without jelly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. Thank you.
It has been excellent. You'll probably hear more of those in future episodes because we did get quite a lot and they are wonderful. But we're going to start with this one from Miranda. She wrote, "My PB&J preference is very personal to me, like you both mentioned. I always had smooth peanut butter and strawberry jelly, but my sandwich had to be placed under the cold pack in my lunchbox. For some reason, I loved how it made the sandwich cold and smashed it together a bit. I can't explain exactly why I liked it, but I was adamant that my sandwich had to be smashed by the ice pack. I am a student naval aviator training to be a Coast Guard pilot, and when I first started flying, I was getting airsick. I was told that peanut butter is a great thing to eat before your flights to have something to settle your stomach. And it worked! Now I have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich before each flight, and I make sure to keep it under my ice pack in my lunchbox. I guess some old habits die hard. Also in college, it was a frequent occurrence that freshmen would stand up at a lunch with a fresh jar of peanut butter, one without the seal taken off. They would yell, "Fire in the hole!" and smash the jar of Skippy peanut butter on their forehead to break open the seal. Peanut butter would fly everywhere, and people would stand up and cheer. However, everyone would yell much louder and boo you if you weren't strong enough to break the seal with your forehead. A strange tradition in our school. I still have no idea where it came from, but I did get hit with a flying glob of peanut butter one day. Good times were had by all, except my stained sweater." That is a very interesting tradition, Miranda. I've never heard of that before.
Me neither.
And I don't think I'd be able to do it. I don't know. I kind of want to try it.
I know you do.
Feels like something I need to prove to myself.
Yeah, this is one of the ones that we can't do in the studio, though.
Yeah.
They wouldn't. I think that's an outdoor activity.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll reconvene later.
Rachel wrote about our crawfish episode. "I live in Houston, Texas, which is an incredible, incredible food city. Not only does it have some southern charm, but it's also home to some kick-ass Tex-Mex and, of course, Texas barbecue. But did you know that Houston is also the most diverse city in the country? Because of this, Houston has an insane amount of international and regional food options. I say all this because you mentioned a crawfish restaurant in Atlanta owned by a Vietnamese family at the beginning of the episode. But did you know that Viet Cajun is its own type of cuisine here in Houston? Viet Cajun came about starting in the late 70s and early 80s after the Vietnam War, when a lot of Vietnamese refugees came to the Gulf Coast, but especially after a large influx of Vietnamese came to Houston after Katrina. Shrimping is a major industry in Vietnam, so when Vietnamese people moved here, they easily transitioned to the crawfish industry. Being so close to Louisiana, it makes sense that Houston has a lot of Cajun cuisine. However, when the Vietnamese started cooking crawfish, after boiling, they would finish them in all the delicious Vietnamese seasonings, such as garlic and lemongrass sautéed with butter. Mmm, butter. This is, of course, sacrilegious in Louisiana, but Houstonians love their Viet Cajun mud bugs."
They do sound delicious.
Oh, that sounds great. I mean, adding butter to anything isn't really not tasty.
Yeah, it's hard. Nothing's coming to mind immediately.
No.
But I'm sure there's something.
There has to be something.
We'll investigate. We'll do one of our well-known food stuff investigations. We'll get to the bottom of it.
We will.
But in the meantime, please keep those emails coming. You can email us at foodstuff@howstuffworks.com.
You can also find us on social media. We are on Twitter and Facebook at foodstuffhsw, also over on Instagram at foodstuff, and we hope to hear from you. Thank you, as always, to our amazing super producer, Dylan Fagan, who has his other headphones on and is listening to something else entirely. Belated shout out to our research assistant, Christopher Hasiotis, for giving us a whole bunch of peanut butter research to get us kickstarted on that episode, who's just a terrific human person. We're hoping to get him on the show sometime kind of soon because he's a font of amazing food facts.
Indeed he is.
Amazing food fact font. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.